This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. In Indiana, Concord High School is synonymous with sold-out crowds, towering trophies, and countless hours of practice. It takes a huge staff of school administrators, teachers, and parents to get them onto the field, and when they march out onto the gridiron, the crowd showers them with cheers and applause, all at halftime. The Concord Community High School Marching Minutemen is one of the best high school marching bands in the state, possibly the country. Journalist Kristen Lane spent a year with the band and its famous director, Max Jones, and discovered the kids on the field learn a lot more than playing and walking at the same time. She joins us in a moment, but if you played in a marching band in high school, or if you are now, give us a call. What did you learn? And if you're a band director or a band parent, we'd love to hear from you, too. Our number is 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK, our email address, talk@npr.org, and you can comment on our blog at npr.org/blogofthenation. Later in the program, why we pay so little attention to the tens of thousands killed every year on our roads and what we can do about it. But first, high school marching bands. Kristen Lane's new book is called American Band, Music, Dreams, and Coming of Age in the Heartland. She joins us from the studios of member station WFYI in Indianapolis. And Kristen, nice to have you on the program today. Thanks for coming
in. It's great to be here, Neil. Thank you.
And let's get to it. You were in a marching band yourself when you were in high school.
I was. It was the Richmond Red Devil Marching Band from, what would you expect, Richmond, Indiana.
Richmond, Indiana. And I gather that in the course of researching this book, you donned the uniform and picked up the trumpet once again.
Well, yes, although I played it very badly, as the people in the band can tell you.
What was it about your experience that made you want to write a book about high school marching bands?
Well, there were a couple of things. One of the things that made me want to write a book about marching bands was something I understood even as I was doing it. And that's that when I was in the marching band, I had an experience of working together as part of a group, reaching for, excellence. Mm-hmm. And when you think about the experience that you have in a school classroom throughout most of your schooling, you know, if you get an A or a C or a D, it doesn't matter what your classmate does. But in marching band as a class, it does. And so I had that experience and appreciated it so much that I actually wrote my application to college about being in the marching band. And that kind of wonderful experience of teamwork. Mm-hmm. But then later, when I was 25 years out of high school, I came to a deeper, more adult understanding of the lessons that I had learned and really the way that band had been for me and for many others, a kind of home or a surrogate family.
And it better be a home or a surrogate family because you certainly spend an awful lot of time there.
Well, you know, the students who are in marching band today spend so many more hours at a higher level intensity than I ever did, you know, 30-some years ago.
August 6th, high school kids are enjoying their last couple of 3 weeks of vacation, looking a little forlornly at that summer reading list they still haven't gotten around to. But if you're a member of the marching band, what are you doing on August 6th in Concord?
Oh, my gosh. I have to tell you, the temperature here, I think, is in the high 90s today, and the humidity is well over that. And these poor kids, a number of them, particularly in the center of the state where I am right now, mm-hmm. they are preparing like mad for really the culmination of their season, which is a summer season. That's the Indiana State Fair Band Day. They are practicing, some of them, 8 hours today in this heat and humidity, and I feel for them. And the kinds of things they're doing, they are practicing their music and they're practicing their marching. They're putting it together in routines and shows that they will then perform in front of a packed grandstand at the state fair.
At the state? Well, you get a trip to the state fair out of it.
I do. I'm thrilled.
Let's see if we can get some listeners on the line. 800-989-8255. 800-989-TALK. Email is talk@npr.org. We're talking with Kristen Lane about her new book, American Band. And let's begin with Fred. And Fred's calling us from Indiana.
Hello.
Hi.
Good morning. Good afternoon. I am calling with perhaps a somewhat antithetical experience in a marching band. I went to high school in a very small town in rural Indiana. We had hand-me-down woolen uniforms from the 1950s, and the instruments weren't too bad. But there's only about 20 of us, and we were asked to go all over the state and march in these usually small town parades, and as well as football games. The program was just starting, and we didn't have a very good band. And I just wanted to say that, you know, not all marching bands, at least one I was involved with, are not these super regimented, highly organized, just perfect, wonderful bands, but they can teach you something about life. In my case, it was humility and the ability to laugh at yourself.
Lessons that will serve you in good stead, Fred.
I hope so. I hope so for a long time to come.
All right, Fred. Thanks very much for the call. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
There are lots of lessons to be learned in marching band, those among them. What do you think, Kristen, what do you think you particularly learned from your experience? And getting on to some of the kids that you were writing about, were they that reflective? As you say, you're 25 years out of high school.
That's right. And actually, and a few more. Actually, I want to say something just in response to what Fred said. You know, he was talking. What I noticed is that when he started talking, he said, you know, I wasn't in, you know, one of those great marching bands. But then he ended what he, you know, his comments by saying he'd learned lessons, you know, for life. And I think one of the things I want to say here, and I hope I'm getting across in the book, is that you don't need to be a winner. You know, you don't need to win state championships. You don't need to win even a single contest in a marching band, I think, in order to have a very positive experience. Because, you know, those lessons in teamwork and learning to, you know, kind of do two things at once, which is what music and marching kind of do to you. Lessons like that come even in average bands run, you know, where the kids are wearing, you know, those half a century old woolen uniforms. But I do also want to point out that this was a caller from Indiana, and I think Indiana is remarkable in the depth and quality of the marching bands that you have across the state, even in small towns. He didn't name that small town, but, you know, the one that he was in, they had a well-trained band director, I bet, and they had a community that supported perhaps those kids to its fullest extent.
And there are a lot of communities, particularly in Indiana, as you write, but a lot of other places too, where the band is a bigger deal than the football team. But there are an awful lot of places where the band, you know, you're kidding.
Right, right. Well, and I live in places like that now. I think if you live along the coast, you're much more likely to have people say to you, you know, marching band, isn't that dead now? You know,
yeah.
Don't they just do that at, you know, Thanksgiving and on the first day of the new year in a parade? And of course, if you've only seen a parade band, you know, one of the big televised parades, and if you've only seen it on TV in particular, you really are missing a lot of what, you know, millions of kids are doing with their summers and falls.
Well, let's get Susan on the line. Susan's with us from Phoenix, Arizona.
Hi there.
Hi.
I was in the Aztec marching band at Corona del Sol from 1994 to 1997. And I guess, just like to reiterate the fact that after doing marching band, you really feel like you can do anything. After you play Shostakovich and run backwards and keep a perfect circle. although it's physical, I mean, you really challenge yourself, and it seems impossible at the beginning of the year. And then by the end of the semester, you know, you've got everything memorized, and it just seems like an impossible task. And I guess that's just really what life is. It's a bunch of seemingly impossible tasks that, you know, you really can conquer.
If you take them one, you'll excuse the expression, one step at a time.
Right, one step at a time, but just really push yourself and not allow yourself to say that something's impossible. And really, a lot of the kids that I was in marching band with have gone on to do really great things in fields of research. And I don't know, I also taught at a high school where the marching band wasn't really as, you know, spectacular. And I just felt bad for them, like they're really missing out on something. Definitely. When I have kids, maybe this isn't a good thing, but probably shove it down their throat.
And Susan, what instrument did you play?
I was on sax, maybe not the most admirable of instruments, but definitely blame for everything that goes wrong in band. It would be the saxes. We had a great time. It kicked my butt, and now nothing seems impossible.
Oh, well, that's a great lesson to learn from anything, Susan. Thanks very much.
Yeah.
For that.
Thank you.
And it's interesting, the band that you write about in Concord had a famous leader, Max Jones, and he had incredible ambitions for this band.
Yes, he did. He is a legend in the state of Indiana. He had brought an earlier band into a more than one decade dynasty of winning these state championships. And what turns out to be the year before he leaves teaching a marching band to high school students, he is on the brink of creating a second dynasty with the Concord Band. But the dynasty he wanted to create wasn't so much about winning championships, but really this larger idea of creating individuals and character in all of its many manifestations, which included a kind of form of leadership where freshmen would learn but be taught not just by their directors, but also by the older students who looked out for them on the practice field as well as off the practice field.
Mm-hmm. It was fascinating to me. The officers, if you will, were all adults, but all the non-coms, the section leaders, they were all students.
That's right. Well, the marching band, I should say, the Concord Marching Minutemen in 2004 were, the number of students in the band was, the high was 243, which is... That's a lot of kids in a marching band. I think, you know, probably other people around the country are thinking, oh, my gosh, yeah, that's huge. And they had seven directors teaching them. So the level of learning that they had to do really meant that the other students, the juniors and seniors, and particularly the seniors, had to step forward and also become teachers working with the directors.
We're talking with Kristen Lane about her new book, American Band, Music, Dreams, and Coming of Age in the Heartland. If you played in a marching band, or if you still do, give us a call, 800-989-8255, or zap us an email. The address is talk@npr.org. I'm Neil Conan. It's the Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. Here's an email we got from Lynn in Oakland, California. I was a certified band nerd in my South Louisiana high school in the 80s. We were one of the top bands in the state. As word got out about our awards, more people watched our halftime show. I'll never forget the first time I heard an entire stadium stand up and cheer for us, the band. My experience has been with me for a lifetime. I learned discipline and teamwork as well as music, and whenever I hear a marching band, I'm filled with happy memories of those times. Our guest is Kristen Lane, who tells the story of the Concord High School Marching Band in Indiana in her new book, American Band. If you'd like to join the conversation, our number is 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. Email us, talk@npr.org. And it was, again, interesting to read in your book, Kristen Lane. Lynn emailed about the being a band nerd. In Concord High School, it was accepted that all of the advanced placement classes and honors classes, those rows in those classes, they were packed with kids who were members of the band.
Well, and you know, that's not just true in Concord. That is generally true in most high schools where there's a music program. You will find that the best students in the school and the students in the AP classes are often the students who are also in the band and the orchestra.
Interesting in that respect, you follow several of these students through their senior particular experience with the band. And there's, I guess, a lot happens every senior year in every high school, but it seems an awful lot happens in that particular year in that particular high school.
That is so true. This book, I think, is remarkable in that sense. The stories that I found in that band among a group of students that I followed, to me, seemed to end up touching on kind of arcs of change and tension that you normally don't find in any group of people's lives, but particularly not a group of teenagers who are all coming of age. Mm-hmm. We had students who were trying to understand who they were and, you know, their deepest questions and issues of identity.
One of the ones you write about is one of the brightest, named Grant Longenbaugh. Am I pronouncing that right?
Longenbaugh.
Longenbaugh.
That's right. Longenbaugh.
Yeah. He was dealing with some incredibly heavy personal stuff while still leading his section and in a way, leading the whole band.
Yes, and Grant is an unusual and very interesting character for me because in many ways he had grown up in that community, always first in his class. Ever since they started keeping rankings, he had won awards for his art. He sat first chair trumpet. He was on track when I met him to graduate as valedictorian of his class. He really stood in that community for everything, you know, that they hoped for and the really best of it. And then as his senior year progressed through the marching season and then on toward graduation, he had questions of faith and purpose, and then also just real family tragedies that occurred mm-hmm. to him, you know, that happened to him over the course of that time. And I was there to see it and to see how this 18-year-old young man faced a number of important life moments.
Hmm. An interesting story. Let's get some more listeners on the line. This is Kara. Kara with us from Phoenix, Arizona.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I just wanted to talk a little bit about my band experience. I was in band in Florida all throughout high school, and not only did I learn valuable life lessons, but I was band captain and section leader of the foot section, so I learned a lot about leadership that I still use in my career today.
Of which section? I'm sorry, I missed that.
The flute section.
The flute section.
Yes.
And how many flutes were you in charge of?
I'd say it ranged from 7 to 12, depending on what time of year it was.
So leadership is critical for people like Kara, Kristen Lane.
That's right. It is. And when you think about the experiences that kids are normally having in the course of their school day or perhaps even in the jobs that they may have, maybe they're stocking shelves at the grocery store or they're behind a cash register, but you don't normally think of teenagers as getting to practice true leadership where what they do actually has a perceivable end result that not only they will see, but also their peers and their teachers and then an entire community, maybe tens of thousands of people will see whether or not they successfully motivated a group of students like themselves to, you know, keep their lines straight or play their music correctly or perform for a crowd. Hmm. It's remarkable. And I think some of these students won't have that kind of leadership experience again until they may be, you know, well into adulthood.
Hmm. Kara, would you agree with that?
Most definitely. I mean, to this day, I say, wow, I remember I learned that skill in band, and if I'm having troubles in the workplace, I'll tell someone, hey, this worked when I was in band. And it sounds really silly to people to tell adults that, but, you know, I have little theories that I pull up all the time. And really quickly, I did also want to say that band also has a legacy. It leaves a legacy because my grandfather was a great band director and for over 20 years in a really small town. And at his funeral, all of these people got up, over 50 people got up and said, I was in D-Man's band, and everything I learned to this day I use. Hmm. And that's just more powerful than anything. I mean, that's being immortal.
Immortal. I guess when you use phrases like immortal, and Kara, thanks very much for the call, and dynasty, you're talking about pretty potent stuff, Kristen Lane.
That's right. And Kara brings up such a good point about the role of the band director in these marching band communities. Max Jones still is remembered. In fact, his legend lives on in the town that he left more than 20 years ago, Winchester, Indiana, you know, as a man who has numerous children named after him. Mm-hmm. And also, you know, the man who really made, you know, many of the people who've gone on to become leaders in that community. And he's, of course, he goes on to change lives, even in the band that I write about. But something that I appreciated hearing from him is that, you know, he believed in the honor of being a good teacher. And he understood that he had the pleasure of being able to teach students in a way that most teachers don't get to. He taught them at 7 in the morning. He taught them after midnight. You know, whenever they were together, there was some form of learning going on in that group. And I guess some teachers listening to this might think, oh, that's not such a good thing. But I think it did allow him to gain access to these students in a way that many teachers don't get to. Hmm. And to sort of teach them in the round, if you will.
Let's get Grant on the line. Grant's with us from Salem, Oregon.
Hi, I'm a director of bands at a university out in the Pacific Northwest. And I participated as a marching band member all through high school. I was in the University of Michigan marching band when I was in college. And one of the things that I think is really interesting about band is, first let me say, my experience was a wonderful one as a student. But as I started teaching band, I taught high school marching band in Lansing and Detroit, Michigan. But as I started teaching, I started thinking that a lot of the lessons that we learn in marching band can be learned in other places, too. So the question that I had was, when I started reflecting on this, what is it about marching band? What does it give us that nothing else can? And I think the answer for me was it gives us music. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, I wonder, you know, do marching band programs really give us a musical experience? And I think for me, the answer oftentimes is no, especially in these big competitive high school marching bands. The students don't really learn music. They learn how to play an instrument, but they're not learning to be musicians. Because in art class, students will study works of Impressionism, and then they'll actually make paintings. They'll create works that are in an Impressionist style. In English class, they'll study poems in iambic pentameter. You know, they'll read To His Coy Mistress, and then they'll write something in that style. But in music, a lot of times, especially in large music programs, we don't get this act of creation, and I feel like that's really something missing in a marching band context, that we don't get this opportunity to create something from scratch, to actually be composers, to be improvisers, and to learn that music is an emotional outlet for us.
Kristen Lane, I wonder if you had a reaction to that.
Oh, yes. Grant, thank you so much for your call, because you bring up a number of important issues in music education and also in how we develop our music programs. I will say that I think the program that I followed, the Concord program, did do an unusually good job of teaching students music, not just marching band. And there is a difference. You're right. Some programs, in fact, the program that Max Jones came into at Concord was much more of a rote system, where the kids were told their fingering, they were taught what to do and when to do it, and that's not exactly learning music. So that is, I think, a possibility for any music program, whether it's marching band or orchestra, in the schools. But I think that it's important for us to remember, as communities that may support marching bands or music programs, that fundamentally what the students do want to learn is an appreciation for music and a deep understanding of it, and that can be hard to learn on the marching field. And yet, what I saw in Concord and what I've seen in other communities is that marching band is the most accessible way for the community to appreciate the music that the students get to play. Many more people come out to watch marching band competitions or performances than go to hear the orchestras. It's a sad but true, you know, state. And so I think a lot of the directors and are trying to find ways to bring music, real music, into a community that may not otherwise feel that music itself is worth learning, just the way they may not believe that art is really worth learning or understanding. And Max Jones, in the season that I followed, taught the students how to play a swing beat. And if you're a band director, you know that teaching kids to swing, which means to have beats on the not on 1 and 3, but on 2 and 4, and even around the 2 and the 4, can be a very difficult thing for young students to learn. You know, and he tried to bring them an understanding of what it means to play that kind of music. One of the other directors in Indiana in the Jasper program, a man by the name of James Goodhue, had his band march Barber's second essay for orchestra on the marching field that same year. And that's a piece that many orchestras won't play in a 5-year series. So these students and their parents were learning music. They were learning it in a way that is perhaps, in a sense, American, in that it had to be in motion and maybe it had to be in a competition. But I do believe that they were learning music.
Mm-hmm. It is possible, in other words, yes.
I think it's possible, and I think it's also, it's a tension in a good music program. There's a tension between that desire to win, perhaps, and the need to teach the students something about music in depth.
And Grant, what's the biggest challenge you face this fall?
Well, I think in general, one of the things that we have to kind of push through sometimes is that students have experiences in their high school band programs that are wonderful, this huge monolithic programs. When I was teaching in Michigan, I worked with some students at, you know, arguably one of the best high school marching band programs in the country. And what would end up happening when they moved to the collegiate level is they were exhausted. You know, they were tired of doing all of these things that made marching band marching band. So sometimes for them, they started to think that they were tired of being in music, not tired of the kind of marching band experience that they had.
All right.
So, you know, I think balance really is the thing that we're after, trying to find ways to have real musical experiences, trying to find ways to have, you know, exciting competitive experience, great bonding experiences, leadership experience, and all these things. But again, not at the expense of students learning music as an expressive art form.
Grant, thanks very much for the call. We appreciate
it. Thanks for taking
my call. In her book, American Band, Kristen Lane writes, for the next 3.5 months, they'd seldom sit to play their instruments. They'd rarely play from the sheet music the director had already handed out for their notebooks. Instead, they'd learn why he'd insisted they use plastic page protectors. They'd play the music on those pages in drizzle and in downpour and heat so searing it softened the tar on the track pavement, and later in sleet blowing down from Lake Michigan, and play it from memory. You can hear the Concord High School Marching Minutemen perform at the 2004 state finals and read an excerpt about the competition at our website, npr.org. And this is Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And let's see if we can get another caller on for Kristen Lane. This is Louisa. Louisa with us from Denver in Colorado. Excuse me, in Denver, North Carolina.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. I'm a band mom, and I am so proud of our students at Lincoln High School Marching Band. It's a small county in North Carolina. In the last comment about the weather, I mean, they're marching outside. These kids become tough, and my son is 13, ninth grade. He was 12 years old in the high school marching band, one of two. And I'm just so proud of him from being a parent. And, I mean, he's becoming tough, and he's learning teamwork, and he's hanging out with the smart kids, like she said. And he's good. He's good. He truly enjoys his trombone. He is proud. And we as parents are so proud when they're in competition. And after they get done, I'm like, yeah, you know, I really get into it. And I'm just so proud of Neil Underwood and, you know, Go Max and all of these band directors and sectional leaders that are all helping our students to grow in so many different ways. So I'm just very, very proud to see the students do what they do.
Louisa, thanks very much for that, and I'm sure your child appreciates it too. And it's important to remember, Kristen Lane, that it's not just the kids and the band instructors, it's all the parents, indeed the whole community has to support this.
That's it. That's so true. The band parents in the Concord community numbered in the hundreds. More than 300 helped the students when I was there in 2004. And they do things like drive the trucks. They sew the uniforms. They take care of the kids in the band. And I think that's one of the appeals for the larger community is that here is a classroom, if you will, a class that their students are taking. They get to see how their own children interact with other teachers and their peers. But they also get to support them in some way that's in the wings, at the edges. They're not central in their children's lives at that point. It's like they're watching them begin to leave home right there in front of them, and yet they get to still support them in ways that are meaningful to everybody concerned.
Let's see if we get one last caller on. Mike. Mike's with us from Maine.
Yes, I am, but I was in a band in New Jersey. It was a horrible band, and it taught me that P.T. Barnum was right.
Suckers born every minute?
Absolutely.
What did you play, Mike?
I didn't play. I carried a sousaphone. A sousaphone, for those who don't know, is a tuba that you wear, developed by John Philip Sousa and named after him.
And it's a big, big instrument.
It's a huge instrument. And there was one other in the band, and they said, boy, if we would have somebody carry another sousaphone, people would think the band would sound much better. And sure enough, I did, and everybody was complimenting the band director on how much better the band sound with a second sousaphone, but I couldn't play a note.
And
finally, after about two or three games, and I carried the sousaphone, they gave me a mouthpiece to put in the sousaphone so it would even look like I had one.
Mike, we're not going to ask you what life lessons you learned from that.
P.T. Barnum was right.
Thank you very much, Mike. And Kristen Lane, thanks very much for your time today. We appreciate
You're very welcome. I guess we'll go out on that not note.
Kristen Lane's new book is called American Band, Music, Dreams, and Coming of Age in the Heartland. She joined us from the studios of member station WFYI in Indianapolis. Up next, far more Americans die in traffic accidents every year than in terrorist attacks or in war. We talk about why we pay so little attention to those numbers. I'm Neil Conan. It's the Talk of the Nation from NPR News.